Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 26, I think? Episode 26 of Victims of Fun. This is El Stevo, your very mellow host. And we are, as always, live from Mr. Fujiwara's top ramen shop in the Chiba district of Tokyo, right across from the Sailor Moon store. It is now officially a ramen coffee shop. There is a new sign hanging out in front, and if you can read Japanese like I can, it says Mr. Fujiwara's Top Ramen and Coffee Experience. Wonderful. We have a pianist here tonight, tickling the ivories in the background. Coffee's being made, ramen's being eaten. People coming in and out. It's a nice, beautiful, clear night here in Tokyo. As always, I want to thank the fine folks at Anchor for the world's greatest podcast software. Go down to Anchor FM and download it, or put it on your mobile phone, either Google or Apple, Android or Apple, from the Google Play Store, the Apple Play Store. It can be up and running in 10 minutes. It's free. All the tools are at your fingertips. Victims of Fun is officially powered by an Apple M1 MacBook Air. So thank you to the fine folks at Apple. The Victims of Fun podcast is stored exclusively in a Seagate SSD drive, Seagate OneTouch. Thank you to the folks at Seagate. And as always, my beautiful voice is coming to you live from a blue microphone, Yeti Snowball, beautiful, well-constructed, wonderful microphone. Blue makes the best audio microphones on the planet. And you should check them out. And I actually tweeted to them, because we have a Twitter, and I tweeted to them that they need to make a mixer. And they tweeted back saying that's actually a very good idea, and they're going to bring that up with management and research and probably get on it. So I just may have sparked something. Maybe they'll name it after me. You know, the Victims of Fun Mixer. As usual, you can email Victims of Fun at victimsoffun@mail.com. You can follow us on Spotify or any of the other podcasting websites where we're hosted. Still waiting to hear from iHeartRadio. You follow us on Instagram, Victims of Fun, Twitter, Victims of Fun, Facebook, Victims of Fun. Just search Victims of Fun, you'll see it. I have the same logo on everything. And, you know, follow us. We're going to have a Twitch stream soon. If I can ever get the Twitch software to work, I can't really figure it out. I'm not good with that. I keep trying. But, so, I have a pet snail. I have an aquatic snail, a mystery snail, a golden one. And his name is Sir Snails-a-Lot, you know, after Sir Mix-a-Lot. And snails are very, it's aquatic snail, so he lives in the water. It's like, it's not a, like, terrestrial snail. And he doesn't do half and half. He lives underwater. He's got gills. I mean, he can live out of water for a day or so, but he's in a tank by himself. And when I got him, he was the size of like a pea, and now he's bigger than a golf ball. And they don't live long. They only live about a year and a half, 2 years. And I think Sir Snails-a-Lot's like 6 months old, somewhere around there. And so I changed his tank today. I always had gravel on the bottom of the tank, and apparently I read that's kind of rough on their, because snails have one big foot on the bottom, and it's kind of, the gravel's kind of rough on them. I mean, they do it, but their natural thing, I think, is like sand. So I got some aquarium sand, cleaned the whole tank out, and transplanted the plants and everything else, and put them in there. And there you go. So Sir Snails-a-Lot has his tank now with with sand. which is pretty good. Yeah, it's not that bad. And he likes it. But having a snail is cool. They're very easy to take care of. They they just kind of hang out and swim around, and you feed them algae tablets and they eat them. And they climb all over the wall, and you get them a rock or some plants, and they're kind of chill because they're not like fish where they're swimming around like crazy, or they're very low maintenance. They have a very high tolerance to different water, at the acidity level and whatnot. The only thing they're very sensitive to is copper in the water, so you have to be careful. Like if you use any metal instruments to clean anything out, they're not going to like that. But so Sir Snails a lot lives in the tank, and he chills. They go into hibernation mode. Like every couple weeks, they'll kind of like, you'll think they're dead because they kind of just shut down. And they'll either retract completely into their shell, or half of their head, mouth, whatever is, drooping out of the shell, and they don't move really except their antenna occasionally. But they're alive. They just do that. It's like a hibernation thing. And if you disturb them and they wake them up, they're just going to be in hibernation longer. So people who think they're dead, pull them out of the tank, poking on them and everything, you're just making them hibernate longer. But they do that. And he's in hibernation mode right now. And he's kind of sitting in the tank with, he's not fully into his shell. His, like, kind of mouth is out there with his antenna, but his eyes are tucked back. So he'll probably be like that for a couple days. They don't eat. But you can tell if they're alive because a dead snail will float to the top of the tank and they'll smell. Like, they'll have like a snaily type. So if your snail is still in the bottom of the tank and there's no smell, he's still alive, he's just hibernating. So right now, Sir Snail's a lot's kind of just hibernating. And when he's active, he's pretty active. But I was thinking about getting him a friend. I just don't want baby snails, because you can get an infestation of snails if you're not careful. And you don't even, certain snails, you don't even know if they laid eggs or not because they're so small. And, if you don't pay attention, next thing you know, you got 50 little baby snails running around the tank, and you think you got rid of them all, but as one of them's under the stone or on the plant, you're just going to have more. So you got to be careful with that. But, there's people who have like 100-gallon tanks with snails in them and everything. And I go to PetSmart to pick up, I'll go to PetSmart to get the filter because I have a filter running, and I have these LED lights on the top, and I have an air stone because it aerates, it adds oxygen to the water. And so I was at PetSmart today, and they, I call it PetSmart. It's a Japanese equivalent of PetSmart. I don't know how you pronounce it. It's in Japanese. But I call it PetSmart because it's the same color. So I go to the Japanese PetSmart. And they have crabs. Apparently you can raise crabs in a tank. And they have to have a rock to sit on and everything, but you can get crabs. I always thought having a turtle would be cool. I used to know a girl who whose parents like traveled around the United States in an RV, and they had a turtle that, this thing, I forget what kind of turtle it was. It was a tortoise or whatever. I don't know. Turtle, tortoise, they're two different animals, are the same. Anyway, the whole thing is, this thing was big enough to where a little kid could ride on it, and it lived in their RV, and wherever they went, they took it with them, because they barely eat, and they only defecate like once a month or something, and they're very slow metabolism, so this turtle would go with them everywhere. And it was some sort of desert turtle, I don't know what it was, but it was big enough to where a little kid could like ride on the damn thing. And I remember she told me that, because I said, these things live forever. And she said that her parents already had it set up in the will that the turtle would go to her, and then she's like, the turtle's gonna outlive me, so my kids will end up with it if I ever have any. And, you know, because this turtle could live to be 130, 140 years old. I remember reading, I don't know if it's still alive or not, but supposedly like 10 years ago, Winston Churchill had a parrot, and birds live forever, and parrots live like insanely long time. And supposedly Winston Churchill's parrot, like 10, 15 years ago, was still alive. And Winston had taught it a whole bunch of really profane words. And, you know, you would go in and say, "Hey, parrot," and the parrot would go, you know, "F Hitler, F Mussolini, blah, blah, blah," and all this other. And he taught it obscenities. And so the parrot had lost half its feathers, and they were like, "Oh, God, this parrot." And they had to keep it away from the public because apparently the parrot would just start screaming obscenities at people. And I read that. I don't know if it's true or not, but it sounds so farcical that it probably is true, because I could see Churchill doing something like that. Teaching his parrot all these horrible things to say. But that's something I'd do. If I had a parrot, I'd like be teaching it like really horrible things to yell at people. That's just, you know, that's just how I am. Maybe it's a good thing my snail doesn't talk. But, you know, and then, you know, people have lizards and iguanas and, you know, things like that. And those shibu dogs are big here. That's what the Japanese have, those things. Like that cryptocurrency, what is it, Dogecoin? I mean, it's a horrible coin. It's pushed by Reddit, and Reddit is just a bunch of losers anyway. But anyway, so that dog is like the big dog that is big here. It's not a big dog, but it's the Japanese dog, you know. And they're everywhere, and they're very headstrong, and you can't let them off a leash because they'll just take off and never come back. And when I had dogs, my dogs, when I lived in Europe. When they were alive, they wouldn't leave my side. If they were 10 feet away from me, they would panic if they couldn't see me. I would take them outside. I'd hide behind a bush, and they would like look and not see me, and they literally would start panicking, like having panic attacks. And then I'd jump out from behind the bush and go, "Here I am," and they'd run over and be like, "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God," because I guess they couldn't, you know. I have that effect on people. But I had a goldfish when I was young. His name was Fred. And I had a girlfriend at the time named Brenda. And she got me Fred as a joke from a carnival. And Fred came in a little champagne glass. And Fred was maybe half an inch long. She's like, "Look, I got you a pet." I'm like, "Oh, great. Fred." I named him Fred, and I put him in I had a small glass fish tank that I had a betta in, and this fish tank was like maybe not even a gallon, maybe half a gallon. And so I put Fred in there. I'm like, "He'll be dead in a couple days." Well, Fred lived 10 years. Fred ended up living in his own 10-gallon tank with a filtration system and everything, and Fred got big. Fred got to be about 4.5 inches long, maybe 5. And I remember when I was getting ready to move to Europe and everything after my father had passed away, and Fred was still running around. I'm like, "What am I going to do with Fred? You know, I can't take him to Europe with me." And this was months before I knew I was leaving. And about 4 or 5 months before I left, I'm like, "Okay, what am I going to do with Fred? I got to find a home for Fred or something." And then about 2 months or so before I left, Fred passed away. He was old. He was a very, very old fish. And it's funny because I would feed him. And I remember if anybody would go in my room, he would zoom to the top of the tank because he was assuming he was gonna get food from them. So he kind of knew. Like, they say goldfish have a memory span of like 40 seconds, but You know, whenever I walked near the tank, Fred was always, like, right up there looking at me. So, I don't know. I think Fred kind of, because he was around for 10 years, I think Fred kind of was like, yeah, this is the guy who gets me food. And, but yeah, Fred lived, like, 10 years? Yeah. Yeah, he was around longer than that girlfriend that got him for me. So. But yeah, he had his own tank, filtration system, everything. I mean, the things people do for their pets. I remember that they said that during the Great Depression in the United States, there were three industries that were not affected by the Depression as far as they kept making money. One was the beauty industry. Because women still would go and get their makeup and their stockings or whatever. So that type of thing. They, I don't know where they got the money from, but they did it. The other industry was the movie theaters. People still went to the cinema. And they were still going in there. And the third industry during the Great Depression that apparently did very well was the pet industry. Veterinary care, pet food and everything. Because people love their pets. They're part of their family. And I remember in psychology class in university that one of my professors were explaining that the way human beings think and how most people are, that they will provide for an animal, like a pet, before they will provide for themselves. Most people. And that's kind of true. You know, I remember I had a little dog growing up named Tibby. She was a little Lhasa Apso, and, you know, I would take her on my bike places and everything because I lived near the lake, and go to the lake and go to the little ice cream parlor there. And I remember, and there was a pet store, mom and pop pet store, about a mile from the lake. And I remember biking around with Tibby, and I had her in a little basket in front of my bike. I'm like, well, I got $3. I can go get some ice cream. Or I'd go to that pet store and I could get Tibby some biscuits. And I would go to the pet store and I would go without ice cream. So I could give Tibby a little rawhide bone or some dog chews or something. And they're right. Most people will provide for their pets before they'll provide for themselves. Now, obviously, they're going to provide for their children or family. But I'm talking about providing for themselves personally. Like, you know, and homeless people, it sounds horrible to say, but homeless people are a great example of that. You see these homeless people with dogs and cats, and they'll get a donation. Somebody will give them food or somebody will give them money. The first thing they do is feed the animal. You know, I've seen this before. I've seen, like, personally witnessed this. Where somebody will give a homeless person, they'll go in and they'll get them a... I remember being in Philadelphia and I saw this guy there with a... I forgot what kind of dog it was. A big furry dog. Homeless guy. And this person came up and had a big bag of McDonald's and gave it to the homeless guy. And after thanking the person, the first thing the homeless guy did is he dove into the bag, grabbed a couple hamburgers and fed the dog. He didn't eat first. He took the hamburgers out and gave them to the dog first. You know, that's how people are. Most normal people will provide for their pet before they'll provide for themselves personally, you know. They're cold, they'll give the pet the blanket or try to share it, or they'll spend money on it, or like, but yeah, during the Great Depression, people, the little bit of money they had, you know, they were spending on their pets, or the women still had to have their, I guess, makeup or lipstick or whatever they were doing, and people still needed to be entertained. And they were kind of depression-proof industries. Yeah, I find that interesting that people will do that. You know, I would. Like, if I was in a situation, like if I had a dog or a cat, and I'm in a situation where, you know, I can give something nice to my dog or cat, or I can give myself something, whatever, I'll spend the money on my dog or my cat. Like, I've dropped, I don't want to say a lot of money on Sir Snails a lot, but I mean, I'm looking at his tank was 40, the Airstone was 10, $30 for the gravel. I'm probably about 150, 200 into Sir Snails a lot, just from the equipment that I got to sustain his life. Which, you know, I could throw a fish in there, I could throw another snail in there when he passes away, but, you know, I could have just stuck them in a jar, because these aquatic snails, they can live in, like, just a jar. As long as they have plants, and they're fed, you know, the natural cycle of the water and everything, they're fine with it. They don't really need the filtration or anything going on, as long as the water's not cold. And as long as there's no ammonia or copper buildup, they're good. So basically what a lot of people do is they'll put them in the preserve jars or something where you can seal on top, and they'll put a strata layer in the bottom of, like, aquarium strata, which is nutrient-rich sand or dirt. And then some people put a level of gravel over it, and then they'll put a couple plants in, and then they'll get water from a pond, or they'll use purified water. Not drinking water, tap water. It's going to be purified. Then you put the snail in and you seal the top. And you leave enough room for the, where it's not filled up all the way, because the plants, you know, oxygen, carbon dioxide exchange going on. You're basically creating your own ecosystem. And once in a while you open the top and, you know, if they're not eating, because the snails will eat dead plant matter, but if the plant's not dying, then, you know, open it up once in a while and shove in a, they like kale, they like cucumbers, you get the algae tablets, put it in there, they're good. You know, I could have done that, but I wanted to give him a nice place to live and do his snail stuff. But it's, he's a happy snail. He's kind of interesting. You know, he's got a, I remember I texted a picture of him to my aunt, and he said, oh man, he's got a good life. He just doesn't have a care in the world, nothing going on in politics or anything affects him. He just does his snail thing in his tank, and I'm like, yeah, you know, that's kind of right. I mean, he's got a good deal going on there. He doesn't have to worry about any of the bullshit going on in the world. He just has to worry about what's going on in his tank, and he's kind of like the master of his own domain type of thing, you know? But yeah, that's Sir Snails a lot. He's pretty good. He's got a good life going. But, you know, I always thought that when I retired, I was going to have a basset hound. I was going to sit on the beach and have a basset hound. I was going to name her Bessie. Because basset hounds are like the only dogs as lazy as I am. But, alright, well, we are going to take a short break and hear a commercial. And then we will be right back. And stay tuned. Don't go anywhere, okay? Thank you. And welcome back to Victims of Fun, episode 26. Remember, you can email me at victimsoffun@mail.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Just do a search for Victims of Fun, and you'll see the Victims of Fun logo, and that's me. Also, remember, you can become a supporter by clicking the supporter button, either on Anchor or Spotify or wherever else you listen to this podcast at. You know, you should throw me some money so I could buy a mixer. Sound even better. I want to say, too, that if you're an independent artist, whether it's a singer or a poet or a writer or painter or something, you know, shoot me an email, victimsoffun@mail.com, and I can work something out and feature your stuff on the podcast. It's all about helping people. It's all about networking. Everybody helps each other. Everybody succeeds. Type of thing. You know, I could be spinning some music like a DJ. That'd be pretty cool. But yeah, if you've got, you know, if you have an interesting story to tell, maybe you're a war veteran, or maybe you were kidnapped by aliens, or I don't know, something. If you have an interesting story to tell, let me know, and then you can make a recording of it, and I'll play it on the air, as long as it's not obscene or controversial or anything. I don't want to hear something like, you know, I ran a child sex slavery ring in Malaysia. No, sorry, Mr. Epstein, that's not going to happen. But yeah, you know, I'm always willing to have people on. Eventually, hopefully, I'll have, like, guests coming in on Skype or something. Kind of need a mixer for that, I think. I might be able to get away with just the setup I have. I don't know. But yeah, just shoot me a mail, victimsoffun@mail.com. I'd love to hear from people just telling me if I'm doing a good job or a bad job, especially if you're going to be throwing me some money. That would be good. Hey, you know, maybe you're a mom and pop store, or you have a home business or something you want shouted out. You know, I'll make a commercial for you. You know, it's... It won't be one of those official commercials where I get paid, like through Anchor, but, you know, I'll make a little commercial blurb, an unpaid one, and I'll throw it out there as long as people listen. And there you go. It's all about helping each other. It's all about me making money because, you know, I want to retire in Monaco, and it's going to be very expensive, and I need the money. I need that Joe Rogan cash type of thing. So, obviously... If you're in the United States, you know, there's stuff going on. There's a recent trial. And I don't touch on political stuff like that because there's never a right opinion for anybody. But I will say that, you can't honor somebody's memory by destroying a city. Especially if it's a community of your own people and their own businesses. That's not the way to do it. The person who is no longer with us probably would not appreciate you doing things like that. If you want to reform the system, if you really want justice and you really want things to change, you have to reform it from the inside. Burning stuff down, destroying stuff is not productive. Running for office, getting elected to your local school board, getting elected to your local government, setting up a nonprofit organization to help each other. That's how you make changes in any system, whether it's the justice system or the medical system or whatever. That's how you do it. You change it from within. You don't, and I know it's understandable, people are very... Human beings are very reactive animals. We're reactive. We react to things, to our environment, to outside stimuli. And, you know, you get emotions and everything get in the way. Hey, somebody just messaged me. But the way you reform the justice system is from the inside. If you have a problem with the police... in their behavior, become a cop and be the type of police officer that they should be. If you have a problem with the legal system and how it's unfair, go to school, study, and become a lawyer and change the system. If you think the government's ineffective and it's only looking out for one particular group of people, start at the local level and start running for government. Start running for political positions. Change the system from within. that's how you do it. It's a very simple process. The problem is nobody does it. And this isn't singling out one group or another, because this is something that's been happening in all of history, because that's what I studied. And this goes all the way back to the Roman Empire and on. And every great civilization has gone through things like this, and you can go one of two ways. You can either go the way of destroying everything, which leads to the destruction of the state, or you can go the second way and reform the system, which leads to changing the state. I don't think anybody wants to see America destroyed. You know, we all live there. I'm from there. Nobody wants to see it destroyed. But people want to see it changed. And the right way to do it is to do it using the institutions that are already set up. Like I said, if you have a problem with the police, become a police officer and be the type of police officer that you think the police should be. Become a lawyer and become the type of lawyer that you think lawyers should be. Run for office and become a politician and be the type of politician that you wish politicians were. Don't let the people at the top who are doing everything they can to stay in power and to keep everybody. You have to understand that the entrenched power system, and this is for any country, there's an entrenched power group. You can call them whatever you want. The swamp, the deep state, the Illuminati, whatever. The people entrenched in power never willingly give it up. They do whatever they can to hold on to it, by hook or by crook. Because they don't care about the people they represent. They don't care about the nation that they represent. They care about the money and the power. And to them, it's a game. They will do whatever they can to keep anybody from the outside from breaking into their game. The only people they let in, because they grow old and die, are people that they handpick and groom that are going to behave exactly like them when they shuffle off this mortal coil. But see, here's the thing. There's so few of them and so many of us that they have to do everything they can to keep the world in anarchy and chaos. Because if the rest of the world figured out that we're being bossed around by maybe a few thousand people at the most, it's game over for them within 24 hours. And they're scared to death of that. So get involved in the system. Use the system, use the institution's tools to your advantage. And change it from within. And in a generation, you can change it to where it should be. It can be done. It's not impossible, but violence is not the answer. The only time you use violence is if another country invades you. You know, Hitler wasn't stopped by talking. They grabbed a gun and shot him, you know. But that's really all I want to touch on that, because, you know, politics, talking about politics or religion or, you know, gender, whatever, it's very controversial, and you're never going to say the right thing for anybody, because some people agree with you, some people won't agree with you, some people want to dox you and kill you. So there's no point. This isn't that type of podcast. I don't preach. I have my own personal, political, religious views. I have my own opinions and views on the hot button subjects of the day, but you don't need to know them, because this podcast isn't about that. Healthy debate is good, but it seems that that's a lost art. It seems that everybody just screams and yells at each other, try to cancel each other, doxing people and harassing them, and there's no point. I'd rather talk about snails and other things. Like, here's one for you. We're going to totally change gears here. People who put pineapple on pizza should be should be cast into the pits of hell. You do not put pineapple on pizza. I don't care who you are, what you're doing. Pineapple does not go on pizza. And yeah. Okay, people are going, well, yeah, it's really good, especially if there's ham on there, because you put pineapple on ham. Yeah, you can put pineapple on ham, just not on a freaking pizza. Okay? Pineapple does not belong on pizza. Okay? I'm not even sure anchovies belong on pizza, but you can make an argument that anchovies have more of a place on pizza than pineapple, okay? And I know people are going to say, oh, yeah, but pineapple's a fruit and tomatoes are fruit, so therefore, well, it's different, okay? Nobody ever mistook a tomato for a pineapple and vice versa, okay? Oh, well, you know, the sweetness of the pineapple, it kind of counterbalances the acidity of the tomato and the cheese. That's bullshit. That's just you projecting. Pineapple does not belong on pizza. Period, full stop, right there. Anybody who puts pineapple on pizza should be cast into the lowest pits of hell, like Dante's Inferno, because it doesn't belong there. It should be banned. If I was president, screw world peace, I would ban pineapple pizza. That's it. You just should not do it. I wonder what kind of sadist, thought that. The other thing, too, is I don't like when you have all these specialty pizza type things. I saw they have a Philly cheesesteak pizza. Well, what the hell is that? Why would I want a Philly cheesesteak pizza? I can have pizza and I can have a Philly cheesesteak. Why do I want to put the cheesesteak ingredients on top of a pizza? Then I saw one was a cheeseburger pizza. I could just have a cheeseburger. I saw some pizza that somebody put lobster roll on it, or lobster tail, or whatever. I'm like, who the hell is going to ruin a lobster by putting it on pizza? Yeah, I love pizza. I think it's great. But lobster is its own special thing. You don't put it on pizza. You have lobster, you have melted butter, and that's it. It's like when I see lobster bisque soup, I'm like, this is insane. The only proper way to eat lobster is with melted butter. That's it. And you crack the shell, the tail, the claw, you dip it in the butter, and that's it. None of this frying with olive oil and garlic. I mean, Gordon Ramsay can do anything with lobster. He swears it's great. Screw that. All you need is a lobster. You boil it. Melted butter. Done. And people got to complicate things. It's just, I don't know why you would do that. Put lobster on a pizza. What? I mean, seriously? I remember when I lived in Europe, I had a friend, she was from the UK, and she was telling me about jellied eels. And apparently that's traditional English pub food. And they're eels that live in the Thames River, and they jelly them. Yes, so it's not jelly like peanut butter and jelly, but the eels are in a gelatin, and the gelatin's made of eels, and it's jellied eels, and they're eels inside of a gelatin thing, and there you go. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Jellied eels? How did you beat the Germans in two wars, eating this crap? But apparently it was very big, and she also told me that real fish and chips have to be served in a newspaper. And there was a specific one, and I don't remember if it was The Guardian or something, but it has to be served in a newspaper. Well, apparently the European Union said they can't do that anymore because of the ink, so they have a more clean type of wrapping that makes it look like a newspaper, but it's not the real thing. But I remember living in Prague, they told me that the tradition, because they're very big into goulash, was that you'd make goulash, and then you'd always leave a little bit of the goulash left for the next day. And then you made your fresh batch and poured the stuff from the day before into it. And in the end of that day, you saved a little bit of that batch and you kept going so that you basically, when you had goulash, somewhere in that goulash is a little bit of goulash from like 20 years before. And my friend Dave, who lives in Prague, and he's from, where in the UK is he from? See, Laura was from Nottingham. Dave might have been from West London or something. But anyway, Dave told me that when you make your chips over there, and chips are like English version of French fries. But anyway, so you make your chips, you never clean the frying pan. You just dump the grease out and you wipe it. But you leave everything that was seared on the frying pan there. Because over time, the seasoning and everything is what gives the chips its flavor. And you could have like seasoning baked on this frying pan that's like, was there during World War II. You know? And that was like apparently some sort of tradition over there. Like, see, to me, that sounds good. You know, I like that. I'm sure there's got to be some other things I'm missing, but I can kind of agree with the pan thing. You know, obviously you dip the grease out and you wait for it to cool down and you take a paper towel and just wipe off the grime, but the stuff that baked onto the pan that's stuck there, I can see leaving it on there that it's going to season everything. The goulash thing is kind of okay because, I mean, let's face it, if you have goulash today, there ain't nothing left of the goulash from like 3 weeks ago. But I guess it's the whole idea, you know, that there could be just one drop left type of thing. But yeah, and then I've had real English, like, chips and stuff, and the seasoning is just incredible, and you know, he told me this is why they're so good. It's the seasoning that's been seared on the pan forever. Now, I know my Italian grandparents are probably, you know, screaming in heaven about how horrible that is, but, you know, Italians do things different, and, you know, I mean, you gotta remember, little old Italian ladies in the kitchen were always tasting all the food and putting the spoon right back in. You know? It's funny, my mother watches some Italian cooking lady on TV, and she makes these incredible Italian dishes and everything. And I remember I used to say to my mother, hey, how come you don't make this stuff? Like, you watch all these episodes of this woman making this fantastic food, and then you open up a can of, like, Campbell's tomato soup, and that's your dinner. Why don't you make any of this? You know? I mean, I never got any of it. You know, I mean, the pasta fazool is fantastic. But, like, I remember seeing this woman making these incredible Italian dishes. And, you know, and I always would be like, hey, Mom, why don't you make this? And, hey, why don't we send out for pizza? Like, huh, yeah, great, you know. Yeah, after my father died, the kitchen closed. When I lived in Prague, I used to make Italian food for myself all the time. And I had my friends come over, and I'd be whipping up lasagna and homemade sauce. And you know what's funny is I'm a big Manwich Sloppy Joe fan. Love it. And you couldn't get, back when I lived in Europe, you couldn't get the mix. Because, you know, they have it here, and they have it in the cans. A Sloppy Joe mix or whatever. And it's all you do is just add the ground beef and you pour the sauce in. It's all been pre-measured and pre-seasoned and everything. But back then, in Europe where I was living, they didn't have it. So I would buy the ingredients all separate and I'd make my own Manwich sauce. And I remember one of my friends came over and she's like, "What's this?" I'm like, "This is a Sloppy Joe." I said, "It's a traditional American thing. You'll like this." And she thought it was the best stuff in the world. Okay. So, years later, she marries an American guy and moves to Seattle. And we're friends on Facebook. And I remember she moved over here one day. She's like, you know, I finally had a sloppy Joe here because I told my husband I wanted them. And he's like, oh, that was my favorite stuff growing up. And we made them. She said, but I have to say what you made in Prague was a lot better. I'm like, well, you know, it's homemade. I had another friend who was dating a girl from Estonia. And he met her in Estonia, and then she came to America. And he took her to an all-you-can-eat Chinese buffet. And it was the first time she had ever been there. And this was a little bit after the Estonians freed themselves from the Soviet Union. And so you go to all-you-can-eat, they go to all this all-you-can-eat Chinese buffet. And you know, he goes up there and he starts out with some sushi and, you know, a bowl of wonton soup and comes back. And he's there and she's not back yet from the table. And he's like, well, what's up? And he told me she comes back and her plate is like creaking with food. There's like 6 inches high piled. And she sits down and he goes, wow, you're really hungry for your first plate. She's like, what do you mean first plate? He said, well, you know, this is a buffet. It's all you can eat. And she said, so I figured I better put as much on here as I could. And he said, no, you don't understand. You can go up as many times as you want. It's not all you can eat where you put everything in your plate at once and you're not allowed to go back up. You can go back up as many times as you want. And he said the look on her face was just like, you know, she couldn't, her brain was having problems, comprehending that. Because I guess in Estonia, they had never seen anything like that before. And then he tells me, not only did she finish that plate, she went up 6 more times. And she was a skinny girl. And so she went up 6 more times and just loaded it up and thought it was like the greatest concept in the world. An all-you-can-eat buffet, because I guess under communism, they just had, like, I guess, borscht. Borscht is really good. I've had it. Wouldn't mind eating it. But, or whatever they ate back then in communist times, I guess, borscht and vodka. I just remember that scene from 1984 where they had Victory Gin and Victory Spam, and that's what the workers ate every day. I just kind of imagine that's what it was like back then. In that country. But, I always wanted to have beef Wellington. That's the one he is. I was watching Gordon Ramsay make that on YouTube, and I always wanted beef Wellington. I never had it. And I've never found a restaurant that actually makes it. And, you know, I watch YouTube, and Gordon Ramsay goes over this whole thing about how to make beef Wellington. I always meant to try it, but I just never... It's never had the opportunity, but it just sounds so good. You know, it's the beef wrapped in the pastry with, this mushroom pate thing seasoning. It's a very Christmassy type of meal. And Gordon Ramsay said that when you make it, your whole house smells like Christmas. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, okay, I can deal with that. Because I remember living in Europe when they had the Christmas markets in Prague, I would go buy the incense that burned that smelled like the Christmas trees and the type of incense they burnt in the Catholic churches for Christmas over there. And I'd buy enough to last me the whole year because I love that smell. So, you know, you come over to my apartment in July and it smelled like Christmas. I remember being at university. I had a Christmas party in June. You know, I decorated the room, had the lights, had the tree, played Christmas music. It was all Christmas. It was, you know, it was very popular. You know, it was a Christmas in June thing. The only thing we didn't have was snow. Well, some people had other forms of snow, if you get my drift, but not me. I don't do that sort of thing, but they did. But yeah, we would do that. We would have like Christmas in June, end of the semester type parties. And, now I'm hungry. I'm talking about all this food and I already ate. I don't want... don't want any more ramen or anything. I have some sake. And then after this, I'm actually going to go play some Plinko. So after I pack everything up, I'm going to bring everything back to where I live and then head back out over here and play some Plinko and just chill, because it's a nice night. It's really, really nice out. You see, if I were to get the Twitch channel up and running, if I could figure the software out, I can video myself running around doing that, kind of like Victims of Fun on video. So it wouldn't be like the podcast on video. I wouldn't record myself doing the podcast. It would, the Twitch stream would be more like me doing something different, but under the same Victims of Fun banner. I just have this whole idea of just like, I was thinking of doing a puppet show, but I mean, my type of humor, I'd probably get kicked off Twitch, but I think a puppet show would be hilarious, you know. I had these, when I started doing this, I had all these weird ideas. I do an episode where I sang the entire episode, or I do the entire episode in a foreign language, or I do the entire episode as a different sort of character I would make up, and I still might do that. But, you know, it's so much easier to just turn on a mic and just start talking. You know, like I'm talking to somebody sitting across from me at the ramen shop. For me, that's just easier to do, because if I gotta plan something out, it ain't happening. But anyway, remember, you can email me at victimsoffun@mail.com. Remember, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Just do a search for Victims of Fun. It's under all those social media things are under the Victims of Fun banner. Though I think Twitter is Fun Victims, but just if you just type in Victims of Fun, you'll see it. It's there. And remember, you can listen to me on Spotify and a whole bunch of other podcasting hosts, and make sure you click that support button and send me some cash. I was thinking of setting up a Patreon, but if I can't get anybody to listen or donate here, why are they going to do a Patreon? I mean, I don't know. But, no, I'm going to keep plugging away. And, yeah, but email me. Again, if you're musician or an artist and you want to be featured on Victims of Fun, just, you know, contact me. We'll work something out. And that's about it for this week. I appreciate everybody who's listening. There are people listening, because I can see the analytics on Anchor, you know, on the Anchor website. There's just, you know, there needs to be more. But there are people listening. It's interesting, as you can see the breakdown of where they're from and a whole bunch of other things, and it's supposed to help you to, you know, take a look at the audience that's listening the most and gear your podcast towards them. I guess that kind of works, but, you know, I'm just me. I'm just going to do me, and hopefully everybody likes me, regardless of your gender or age or whatever, you know. So there you go. Thank you again. I think tomorrow I'm just going to hang out and just relax. And hope you all have a nice day. And remember, everybody be calm. Everybody be kind. Everybody's your brother and everybody's your sister. One world, one people. And try to love each other. All right? You all have a wonderful evening. Thank you.